Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. This is coming to the business end of this 2006 rains retreat. The business end, there is such a thing as momentum which you build up in the practice of meditation. It's almost the longer you sit down, the more there's a chance that something will happen. You're just putting in the hours, putting in the time, and eventually that something has to come. And certainly that I was reflecting just the last couple of days that this is my 31st rains retreat as a monk. And so all those hours which I spent sitting on those cushions, and sometimes without cushions, sometimes just in the jungle, sometimes just on the concrete, it's amazing just the results which you can get from persisting with this meditation method. Sometimes that people can be very impatient, just wanting quick results. But remember, that's not the cause for peace and for stillness. You can understand just that to be able to gain the deep meditations, to be able to stop the craving and the clinging which keeps you suffering, that you have to let go sometimes. And part of that letting go is developing patience. The ability to put the causes in place and wait for them to bear fruit. And that's such an important thing in this meditation practice, in the path to liberation. We have to be patient, the ability to wait without interfering with the process. And in fact, that patience is more deep even than that, because by itself that patience is the process. When we just get out of the way, sometimes impatience tells us that we're picking up the delusion, the suffering of time, wanting things to happen now, and counting the months, the days, the hours, the minutes. And that's a stupid way of living one's life, especially on a retreat period. You know, there's heaps of moments left to become enlightened. You know, millions of them when we talk about mind moments. The opportunities which you have are huge, so they're uncountable. And because they're uncountable, we don't even bother with thinking about them. Our own only job, whole purpose, is just to sit down, be quiet, and allow this moment just to exist, to actually to make peace with this moment, to be still, to bring up the causes. And not only is it the causes for getting into deep meditation, that stillness, that peace, that non-doing is also the cause for getting out of samsara. Because the Buddha would always talk about the Four Noble Truths, the suffering of life. And if you haven't got the joys of meditation yet, then at least you've got the suffering. So you've got one of the Four Noble Truths. So whichever one it is, marvelous. You're doing the Buddha's work. And if it's a suffering you have, just realize what that suffering is and where it comes from. And that suffering can be the great cause by itself of getting faith in the Buddha's teachings. And realizing that this samsara sucks, as you say, that just no matter whatever you try and do, whatever you try and achieve, no matter where you try and go or what you try and get, it always is disappointing. Whatever you do in this outside world of the five senses is by its very nature never going to satisfy you. It's going to be frustrating. It never quite goes right. And so because of that, that should give you enough faith and joy that here is the Buddha coming along telling you something, the way you can get out of this prison. And in fact, that sometimes if the meditation isn't sort of really biting by this time, you're not getting limiters and joys and bliss, it is because you haven't appreciated that suffering yet. And you're still getting caught up in it, involved in it. Because this is one of the reasons that why we contemplate things like the body, why we contemplate the rise and fall in the external world, while we contemplate the fact that everything is out of control, it belongs to nature, and it's very, our destiny is to go wrong, to fail, to wear out, to crash, eventually to die. There's this whole nature, whether it's a vehicle, whether it's a person, whether it's a monastery, whether it's a project. The whole world eventually goes wrong. That's where it ends up. So because of that, after a while, we stop investing so much interest. We stop investing so much of our time, you know, in this world of the five senses. The whole point of seeing that suffering is to get this Nibbida, which we were just chanting in the fire sermon. In that fire sermon, you look at the six senses and you see they're just on fire with greed, hate and delusion. It gives you Nibbida, this sense of aversion, revulsion, turning away from these things. Whatever you want in this world, you know, it will never satisfy you. So you keep thinking about that. Every time you suffer, you don't think something's gone wrong. You're suffering, something's gone right. This is the nature of things. It's not when somebody dies that something's gone wrong. It's right that somebody dies. If you're sick, it's not something's wrong with me, doctor. It's right that you're sick. You know, when you sort of get cold or you get too hot, it's right that you're too hot. Ajahn Chah-Tamala, it's right that you're maybe too cold. Venerable Chulaka, it doesn't matter because it's never, ever, wherever you go, perfect. And that's our nature. And when we understand there can be no satisfaction, there can be no peace in that world, we keep reflecting upon that, we keep thinking about that, noticing it, until it conditions us so strongly that we lose our interest in the world of the five senses. And that's of Nibbida, the losing of interest, causes viraga. There's not just dispassion, but the fading away of these things. Because there's disinterest, just the whole world tends to disappear. It's not important to you anymore. And what's not important falls off your radar screen, as they say. You're not concerned about it anymore. So those people, whoever it was, who put in there to chant for the West Coast Eagles, when you're asking for suffering, what are you doing that for? Just at least let that fall off your radar screen. I only sort of talk about that to lay people just because that's lay people's business. But I never sort of talk about that to myself. Who cares whether a football team wins or loses? Now they win, now they lose. And that's like life. So instead of allowing our minds to be occupied with those things, we get Nibbida to football, we get Nibbida to, you know, to girls, to boys, we get Nibbida to music, we get Nibbida to this whole world. And Nibbida means you just had enough of it. And once you've had enough, once you've really had enough, then when you sit down you won't start thinking about it. You won't start fantasizing, you won't start planning, you won't start all this mess which stops you getting into deep meditation. And Nibbida means these things fade away. So if these things haven't faded away yet, do some more strong reflection on them. Just what are these things doing to you? Are they going to be a source of peace, happiness, liberation, joy? Is this really what you want to put in your mind? When you really reflect upon that, not just once, but again and again and again, that reflection on the suffering nature of the five sense world and all the business of this, you know, the usual world which most people indulge in, once you reflect upon that long enough, eventually it changes your conditioning. Instead of the mind inclining to the five sense world, it inclines in the opposite direction. We have this little phrase in the suttas where it says that the mind, once it knows the dangers of these senses, it actually doesn't indulge in them anymore. It actually leaps, pakandati, it leaps towards cessation, towards fading away, towards peace. It goes in the opposite direction. So your job is actually to train the mind to go in the opposite direction so it doesn't go out there into the world of the five senses, into football, into girls and boys, doing things, amassing things, all that sort of stuff. You know, you've done that for so many years already. And you can see other people getting involved in that. And the Buddha said that that's a cause of suffering. You never end samsara that way. All you can hope for is a coffin. But then you get reborn again, have to do it all over again. And what's the point? So the Buddha said, look, there is a way out. And the point of like for you getting that nibbida is it turns you in the opposite direction towards the exit. Remember that exit route is through the jhanas. It's so clear when you actually experience these states and actually know what you're talking about. That's the only way out of samsara. Because what you're doing with samsara, you're stopping everything. The wheel of samsara. It's not that you're stuck on the wheel, you are the wheel of samsara. And your five khandhas, the consciousness, the mental formations, the will, the feelings, the perceptions, even the body, that is samsara. It's not you're stuck on it, you are the wandering, the perpetual wandering. And that's actually a beautiful word that I keep coming back to, the samsara. Wandering back and forth, from place to place, from thing to thing. Sometimes in your meditation you may be samsara-ing. In other words, a mind wandering from this thing, then onto that thing, then onto something else. Always coming and going. That's samsara. When you stop the mind, when you come to stillness, when the mind isn't moving, you're coming close to the end of samsara. If samsara is wandering, the end of samsara is stillness. And so the whole point of the way out is to see what stillness is, how stillness happens, and what it feels like. So you look at stillness, peace, doing nothing, as the way out of samsara. Because you know that in stillness, things disappear. When nothing moves, sound disappears, time disappears, the body disappears after a while when you're really still, and eventually the mind disappears as well. The whole thing stops. It's like learning just, you know, how you've got this little ticking clock. Sometimes you used to have these tick-tock clocks before you had the digital ones, and sometimes it used to drive you crazy at night. I don't know what it was, but at night they sounded much louder than during the day. You try to go and sleep, tick-tock, so you know, put it under your robe so that you won't be able to hear it, but you can still hear it. And sometimes I used to take it outside and put it in the bush and go and get it in the following morning, because it was just so disturbing. And this is just what samsara is like this little mosquito buzzing in your ear. Buzz, 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 buzz. That's what samsara is. There's always something more to do, something more to think about. Listen, the thoughts in the mind is like a mosquito who's actually found its way into your ear, got into your brain, and is buzzing around while you're trying to be meditating. And that's sometimes what it's like, you know, if you got obsessed with thoughts. Now this is where we have to stop all of that business, because that just creates more suffering, and it's not the way out. So our whole job is actually to see how still we can become. So still that you can disappear. I remember just when I used to go to Psychic Research Society in Cambridge, when there's all these magicians and hypnotists and ghostbusters and all of that. I remember someone coming up and saying, look, if you can stand really still, absolutely still, you disappear. It's like a psychic phenomena. People can't see you. And there's some truth in that, because if you don't move, because the eyes can only see movement, they only see change. And so if someone stands absolutely still, maybe they completely disappear. But certainly because our senses are only set up, conditioned and programmed to see change, to see movement, what is still actually does disappear. So the whole point of this is becoming still. We should focus on our body first of all. Do body contemplation until you're completely sick and fed up with this body, if you're not already. This body can never give you any satisfaction. There's always something itching. It's always getting older. You always have to wash it, take it to the toilet, feed it, give it a cup of tea, scratch it. And this is how I like to do the body contemplation, just to see just the tyranny of trying to become comfortable. And so I realize that that is not the way. It just leads to more suffering, more pain. So I just put the body down somewhere and I just leave it alone. By leaving alone, soon it comes still. I can't make it still by moving it, by fidgeting. I can't make it still by scratching. I just leave everything as it is. And because it's still, because I don't move, and the body doesn't move, then it disappears. There I'm actually leaving the world of the body. And this is what we mean about leaving samsara, ending suffering. And just that much, to be able to sit still with a body which disappears, which you don't have to scratch, which doesn't feel hot, which doesn't feel cold, doesn't matter what the temperature is outside, you just don't feel it anymore. And that is a sense of bliss and happiness when something has disappeared because it's become still. From stillness, you get fading away and then cessation. And then freedom. It's a beautiful causal path. You check that out just with your body. When you're sitting in meditation and the hands have disappeared and the legs have disappeared and the back and the head has disappeared, you just can't fit anything, you're in the mind. Oh, it's just so nice. And you reflect upon that afterwards. Why is it nice? You don't just do this for the sake of calm. You think about it afterwards. You reflect upon it, contemplate, what does it mean? And there you see, look, the body went through stillness, it's faded away, it's disappeared, and that's bliss. You've stopped a bit of samsara. You're finding the way out of samsara. By stopping, it starts to disappear. And you stop all your business. When is your business going to be finished? It's not by sending all the letters or making all the phone calls. You finish all your business, you get it all done and out of the way, when you just take your mind away from it, when it's still. When you move and do things, you actually create business. So by sending the letter, you're not going to finish everything off, you just create more responses. By making the telephone call, you don't end telephone calls, but you give people more reason to ring you back again. If you really want to have peace and stillness and to have freedom, freedom from all this movement of the world, you've got to stop and be still. Sure, that telephone will ring, someone calling you, but you never pick it up and answer it. And after a while they get so pissed off at you they never ring again. Ah, freedom at last, thank you. So this is a way of getting out of samsara. And when we understand that this is the way out of samsara, there's this great sutta which I was looking at during my retreat, if I remember correctly, Panchala Chandana Sutta. This is where I think Udayan asked Ananda, he said, when the Buddha sort of said that the Buddha who discovered jhanas and also discovered the escape route, say the okasa, out of the constrictions and the trouble of the world. So what did he mean by that? And this was actually a Devaputta who actually said this little poem. And Udayan was asking Ananda what it really meant. And Ananda sort of replied that the way out, the escape route out of this five sense realm is the jhanas. That's like a person in a prison. And the Buddha has dug this hole to escape. And that's what the jhanas are, the escape hole. And that's exactly what Ananda says to Venerable Udayi. And this is actually how we escape from the five sense world and the body. And there is no other escape. You have to get through those jhanas. And it's obvious because you have to still things, you have to let things go, they have to disappear for you to escape. So little by little we make our minds still. We still the external world, we still the internal world, to see how quiet, how peaceful, how motionless you can be. And when you're motionless, things disappear. That's why I keep on saying about this doer, which keeps on stirring things up, which keeps on making things move. It is the doer which keeps on pushing samsara and making it revolve. It's the engine of the round of rebirths. It's called sankhara. And that sankhara, the fabricator, the doer, the karma formations. They say that that, in dependent origination, that is the cause of consciousness. Rebirth consciousness and all consciousness. Because once you stop the doing, the sankhara ceases. Then because of stillness, because you're not doing anything, you're not moving the world fades away and then disappears. Rupa Samaya is the stillness, the quietness. Leads to viraga and nirodha, fading away in cessation. So little by little, when we understand this, we can allow everything to fade away and to disappear. Just by being still, settling things. And we understand that by settling the five sense realm, we don't have to make it perfect, just leave it alone, it's good enough. As long as we don't try and change it. We take away the doing and the controlling, and then everything disappears. And I know that a lot of people find it hard to understand what that means, to stop doing things, stop controlling, and sometimes people follow that advice and it doesn't work, you're still thinking, fantasizing, falling asleep or whatever. If that's happening, you're still doing something. You haven't followed the instructions properly, you have to use your wisdom to look, so what am I still doing? Where am I still controlling? Why haven't things disappeared? Because when it's really true letting go, when it really is you stop doing things, there always must be a fading away. As Ajahn Chah always said, when you stop blowing on the leaf, then the leaf becomes still. Moment by moment, it becomes more motionless until it's absolutely still and nothing's moving. Because that's nature, that's cause and effect, it has to be that way. So whenever I'm meditating, if nothing's really happening, I look, well, what am I doing? I can always, I've been meditating long enough now, I can know my mind back to front and inside out, and I can find out what I'm doing. Ah, there you go, you're doing that again, stop it. And sometimes you're so skillful, you just stop, and that's it, you know exactly what's going on. It's just the experience, just becoming familiar with the mind. And I know now that every time I stop, the mind just goes into the next level of peace. That's why I always like to say that wisdom and insight, that's what I mean by wisdom and insight, you see where the doer is active, you see the craving, you see the sankharas, you see the fabricating, and you see the thing doing the fabricating, you see it very clearly, and you know it and you stop it, you see the little imp inside which always messes things up, and you stop it, and then it just becomes quiet and peaceful, and you're free of that burden. And the freedom from such burdens gives you such happiness and joy. And this is where one gains the insight, and the insight causes the calm, and the calm means you have more insight. And the two of these things will always work together, bringing you closer and closer to the stopping of samsara. And so when you're practicing meditation this way, to see how much you can become still. If you see any type of movement there, see if you can calm it down and make it still until there's no movement left. Once the mind stops moving, the leaf on the tree is still wobbling. It's the mind stops first, the knower stops first, and the object stops second. So you have to wait for a while. It doesn't work straight away. You have the old momentum from the past. Sure, you're not moving anything now, you're not doing anything now, but all that you've been doing so far, the past, is making the mind move. So that's why whenever I look at my mind, I'm being still in this moment, but it's not happening yet. I realize this is old karma which I'm watching. You might have restlessness, you may have sloth and torpor, that's old karma, but now I'm not going to make new karma. I'm not going to make anything at all, I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to be like the arahat, so still, can never make any more karma. And with that stillness, you can see the old karma just wears away. Any sloth and torpor or restlessness cannot last very long when you don't fight it and struggle with it. You're so still, you just watch. Sure, it's not bright yet. Sure, the object you're watching is moving, but inside, this watcher is absolutely motionless. It's not getting involved in what you're experiencing, nor is it trying to stop it. It just watches. Still, like a person in a movie seat and a movie theater in their seat, just watching all this action in a movie screen, but they are sitting absolutely still. So when you start to do that, after a while, just the movie stops. This is just a nature, and so you just sit there absolutely still, and you're patient, and you wait for things to stop. But if you try and grab hold of the objects of your mind, whether it's a breath or whether it's a nimitta, and try to make it stop, you're calming down the wrong thing. You're actually making more waves. It's just like the person who sits by the side of the lake, who tries to calm the waves in the lake by patting them on their crests. And that way they just make more waves. Take your hands out of the pool that is your mind. Stop doing things. Stop shaking the Bodhi tree inside your mind. But just sit underneath it like a Buddha. Sit underneath your mind, motionless and still. And then you don't disturb it. Because you don't disturb it, everything becomes still. And after a while you know and feel that stillness, and the mind leaps towards it, rather than leaps towards the noise of thinking and manipulating and managing. Just the same way that some people, they gravitate towards the noisy bars and clubs, and other people, they gravitate towards the cool and the calm and the quiet. Some people come here and they just go off into the quiet corners of this monastery. Otherwise, other people look for the noisy places. After a while, the ewes tend to incline towards the calm places in your mind, the quiet spots. Because in your mind is the places where you keep all your fantasies and memories and plans. The little office inside your mind, the little coffee club is between your ears. Somewhere in there you can have a great fun and lots of laughter and lots of activity. But if you go to that place in your mind, then you'll find that there's never any release at all. And you're inclined towards the wrong place, the place of thinking and plans and ideas. Instead, you're inclined to the quiet places in the mind. So seek out in your mind where those places of stillness are. Go in there and rest. See how still you could be. So there's no doing left. All there is unknowing. Just a consciousness, just a mind which just sits there and just watches. And because the mind becomes still first, the objects of the mind, the objects of your meditation, whether it's the breath, whether it's the body, whatever, after a while, because you are still, everything becomes still. You're not shaking the tree, you're not blowing on the leaves, you're not making things move anymore. And you just watch as things calm down. You watch as the breath starts to calm down, becomes softer, smoother, until it just disappears. And there you also, you see this is the nature, the way out of samsara, the way of meditation. You just watch with stillness, and the thing you watch gets more and more refined, more subtle, more calm, until it gets so subtle, poof, it's gone. And you watch everything else, even you watch your mind in the jhanas. You watch them from a place of stillness. And you watch the mind get more and more refined, more and more still. from the first jhana to the second jhana, seeing the wobble disappear, seeing pity disappear, seeing sukha disappear, even seeing just the perceptions of the immaterial jhanas, just seeing all of those just disappear, just through stillness. And because of that, the whole world, the whole universe, everything disappears. You just watch in stillness, and everything goes. You're stopping samsara. You're understanding how parinibbana happens. The end of your life, when this body is about to pass away, you just sit there. You don't do the jhanas. You just stop. The mind stops at death. It's still, and it watches this body just fade away. The pain and the feelings of death just disappear. And then it faces the mind, with all the mind objects, and watches them all fade away. See time disappear, and see all doing, all conceptualizing, all feeling and perception and knowing, seeing it all disappear. You go to cessation, for the absence of doing. From the cessation of sankhara, it's the cessation of vijnana. Everything just stops. And in that stopping, everything disappears. The great emptiness, the great void, bhava nirodha, the cessation of existence, is nibbana, said the Buddha. When we understand that, we understand if the cessation of existence is nibbana, what causes existence? It's all this doing, this craving, taking things up. So we don't take anything up anymore, we put things down, we stop craving, we stop doing. We understand that not only is this the way into deep meditation, it's also the way, the path out of samsara. We understand that. We understand why we have to meditate. We understand that as we develop our meditation, we're also developing our ability to escape from suffering. We are following the Buddha's advice, but we are digging our own hole out of the prison. And that hole is through the jhanas. And those jhanas are caused by letting go, by peace, by stillness. If you want to become enlightened, it means escaping. It means ending suffering. It means stopping samsara. This is what you have to do. Nothing. To know emptiness, nothing can be moving. The whole thing just stops and disappears. The phantom that it was just vanishes. Whole world created by doing, the vibrations of will. When that will disappears and the vibrations stop, nothing is left. All these views and concepts and ideas, all because of a movement of a mind. Now when the mind doesn't move, what is left? What is left is just something continually fading away until everything goes. And everything goes. The emptiness, the nibbana, the ceasing. And that's our goal. So the more you can let go, the more you can abandon, the closer you can get, the deeper is your meditation. And this is how you find how close you are to enlightenment. Just how deep you can go into letting go, into the vanishing of things. So this is our path, the path of vanishing. As Ajahn Chah always used to say, that wang, wang, wang. When you taste an apple, then you know what an apple is. And he said, what is the taste of the Dhamma? He said, emptiness. Nothing there. Wang. So this is what we're trying to do. To empty by doing nothing, by keeping things still, and watching the whole world disappear. Only then will all your business be completed. That's the talk.
Sadhu, 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 sad Supatipanno
Bhagavato.